Before we get into today's episode, I just want to officially announce that my candle shop, Nox & Vesta, after a very long time of teasing it, has finally gone live this morning. We are launching 9 unique scents to start the candle collection, some of my favorites including Alexandria, which is the library type smell, Lav 75, which is a playoff of one of my favorite drinks, the French 75, Rococo, which is a sweet rose, and I'm someone who hates rose, and this is actually really darn delicious, so it's a rose for people who are not crazy about rose. And Tempest, which is kind of like the rainstormy smell. I love burning this candle super late at night when it's just dark and moody out. It's my favorite candle, I think. But we have 9 total in the collection named Alexandria, Aura, Paradisus, Rococo, Lav 75, Gilgamesh, Tempest, Hestia, and Adonis. So if you want to check these out, make sure to go to noxvesta.com. That's NOXVESTA.com. And while you're at it, make sure to go to its Instagram as well and give it a follow. That is also NoxVesta, NOXVESTA. I am so excited to share this with all of you, and I hope you love the candles as much and as long as it took for me to develop them too. There's an island in the Caribbean that's both beautiful to tourists and to billionaires. Is a tax haven for scammers and the super wealthy because it's virtually impossible to get your hands on a dime that goes into these offshore accounts. Today, we're going to take a look at how this place was formed and why it continues to grow to this day. So, hello everyone and welcome back. On today's episode of The Corporate Casket, we're going to be talking about Nevis Island. Now, this is a topic that I actually briefly brought up in one of my streams on Twitch, and it's something that's going to be brought up in a future Juness MLM episode, as they were able to hide assets there and avoid paying money owed to the government. As you can imagine, scam artists and shady people alike have come to adore Nevis, and today we're going to find out why. So, let's get into it. Nevis and St. Kitts is a twin island country governing about 101 square miles located in the Eastern Caribbean Sea. Together, they are the smallest sovereign nation in the Western Hemisphere. Interestingly enough, both islands are actually the summits of a submerged volcanic mountain range. It's said that Europeans probably first spotted Nevis in 1493 on Christopher Columbus's voyage. When they passed the cloud-trapped volcanic island, Columbus apparently named it La Señora de las Nieves. Nevis eventually became known as the Queen of the Caribbees, considering that it had the richest sugar economy in the British West Indies, making it a highly sought-after prize. Alexander Hamilton was born in Nevis, and Lord Horatio Nelson, Britain's most famous admiral, used Nevis as a base of operations in the mid-1780s. Nevis was a part of British colonial holdings until 1967, when it achieved associated statehood with St. Kitts, and in 1983, it became part of an independent nation. Around this time in the mid-80s, a drop in world sugar prices hurt their economy, and the government sought to reduce their dependence on sugar production and diversify. Unfortunately, the nationalized sugar industry kept slumping until, after the 2005 harvest, the government closed it down. Tourism and hosting offshore financial and service companies became their prime sources of income instead. Apparently, this had been a bonanza period for the Caribbean islands, as the global economy opened up and tax evaders and drug dealers alike were stashing money in bank accounts owned by untraceable shell companies. In 1984, Nevis officially became a part of the offshore game, according to my source. In 1984, Bill Barnard, an American lawyer who had taken to vacationing on Nevis, asked the island's premier if he would be interested in getting into the offshore game. Thanks to the almost complete autonomy Nevis enjoys under the federal constitution of St. Kitts and Nevis, its first premier, Simeon Daniel, was free to do what he liked. He approved Barnard's suggestion, passed the incorporation and secrecy laws the American lawyer drafted, and awarded Barnard's company, Morningstar Holdings, the right to act as exclusive agent for creating the companies. It was a win for both of them. Neither Morningstar Holdings nor Barnard wished for comment for this piece. At first, Nevis struggled to compete with already existing rivals, partly because it had no particular advantage of its own. Barnard and his team of American lawyers had borrowed their legislation from Delaware, which acts as a sort of tax haven within the US by offering laxer regulations and lower taxes than other states. So there wasn't much reason to look to a remote island for products you could already buy elsewhere. It was certainly successful, said David Neufeld, a New Jersey lawyer and an expert on company structuring and international tax, but it was never at the level of BVI or Cayman. Once Bernard's monopoly expired a decade later, Nevis decided to work with Neufeld. Funnily enough, Neufeld actually looked to the U.S. for inspiration, specifically Wyoming, which had invented the LLC or limited liability company, which can be used to help people avoid identification and taxes at the same time. See, while we were going offshore as a scammy, questionable move, that's one thing. It's actually far easier to set up an untraceable shell company in the U.S. and in places like Nevada, Delaware, or Wyoming. According to the New York Times, it can be done in 10 to 40 minutes and for as little as $200. Plus, there's effectively no upper limits on the amount of assets a shell company can hold. For the really rich, they have interlocking networks where Company A owns Company B, which owns Company C, which owns an art collection or a mansion. A shell company isn't evidence of illegality, it just means that they have limited liability, which is useful to law-abiding people as well as those that want to be anonymous and hide something. Nevis, simply put, borrowed from these ideas and expanded on their own. After all, in the US, it can be difficult to hide property since courts can order disclosure of that information. However, these courts don't have jurisdiction in Nevis, making the idea of a Caribbean LLC very attractive. As explained, in my mind, I was trying to create an LLC for a 51st state. If you see someone who could be exposed to some kind of predatory lawsuit where people feel you have assets that are exposed, this gives you an opportunity to protect that. In simple terms, Nevis's laws allow rich people to put ramparts around their property to protect it from someone who might want to use the courts to take it away, whether that be a business partner, a spouse, an estranged child, or indeed anyone. All tax havens do this, but Nevis turned the ratchet many clicks further than its rivals in its effort to tempt business away from its rivals. Nevis was in business and their protection was airtight. The harm in this is pretty obvious. It means people aren't paying their taxes and the rich get richer while the poor get poorer. But this practice also diminished tax revenue in countries that truly need it, such as $200 billion forfeited by developing countries. The money that can be hidden there isn't just money that we want to have, it's what's owed by the world's wealthiest. Some articles, such as one from Foreign Policy, argue that we need to apply old-school pressure to stop this. In 1960, French President Charles de Gaulle had to stop French citizens from hiding their income and wealth in Monaco. Apparently, at that time, France had a tax rate of over 50%, whereas Monaco didn't tax the income of French nationals. De Gaulle stopped the practice by literally shutting down one road to Monaco until they disclosed the names of the French citizens using their banks. The equivalent of that today would be banning air and sea travel to places like Nevis until they disclose who uses their tax havens. Is it incredibly harsh? Absolutely. But I'm also really not sure that it would work, and it simply might create more problems down the line. Plus, paying 50% in taxes sounds beyond extreme, so I'm not sure I can blame the French for being so desperate in those days to avoid them. I know if I had 50% of my income going away, I don't really know what I would do. I need that money. But even said, as questionable as those tactics might be, let's take a look at the tactics that Nevis and other offshore accounts actually use. First is that even to bring legal proceedings against Nevis, you actually have to file a bond of $100,000 with the court to prove that your case isn't frivolous. Nevis's LLCs, Neufeld's Innovation, can't be wound up, which means you aren't able to confiscate any assets they own. If you seek to challenge the legality of a property being put in a Nevis-registered trust, you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the trust creation was fraudulent, and you have to begin that legal challenge within a year of its creation. Since Nevis law requires all information on the trust to be confidential, you would be unlikely to know it existed, let alone be able to fight it. A different source also discusses their sugar visa, a program that grants lifetime citizenship to any foreigners that pay $250,000 to a government-backed fund that supports displaced sugar industry workers, or a $400,000 investment in real estate in the Federation. While a quarter of a million or almost half a million dollars sounds like a lot of money for you and I, it might be just considered chump change to a billionaire. Prime Minister Timothy Harris himself said in 2017 that we want persons of high net worth who want an enduring relationship with our country. Yes, the country may be the land of opportunities, but it's not exactly just above board million and billionaires using it. In 2014, a U.S. Treasury Department advisory said lax controls enabled applicants to mask their identity and geographic background. And from September 2017 to March 2018, Nevis made it even easier to purchase citizenship. Apparently, after a series of hurricanes hit the Caribbean, they offered a hurricane visa where a $150,000 donation to the Hurricane Relief Fund could buy citizenship. Additionally, according to a 1985 law, anyone on Nevis disclosing financial information without a court order is liable to a prison term of up to a year, as well as a $10,000 fine. Cayman previously had a similar law against a breach of confidentiality, but decriminalized the offense in 2016, proving that Nevis is still seemingly resisting openness, at least at the time this article was written in 2018 anyway. I was able to find some articles online about the topic dating back to 1999, when the Washington Post claimed that the small islands on the Eastern Caribbean were aggressively trying to expand their offshore financial industries. Back then, it was referred to as a trend and growing concern, whereas, as we'll see in a moment, now it turns out that those concerns are very real and very justified. Back then, from 1992 to 1997, the amount of money in offshore havens was estimated to have grown $3.5 trillion to $4.8 trillion. Some experts said it could have been as high as $8 trillion. And now that amount has gone up to as much as $36 trillion over the years, including not only places like Nevis, but even locations like Ireland. Of course, the financial information on Nevis isn't just a secret kept from journalists, but from foreign police too. The Guardian writes that this means we are all reliant on the Nevis Financial Services Regulatory Commission to check the reliability of their financial information. And given the experiences with said office, this doesn't exactly bode well. Apparently, Heidi Lynn Sutton, the commission's chief regulator, completely dismissed any description of Nevis as a desirable location for criminals to conceal proceeds and defended Nevis against all allegations. The heavy cost of bringing proceedings in Nevis court, for example, was simply to protect the justice system from being bombarded with frivolous lawsuits, rather than to protect the wealthy. That is our weeding out mechanism, she said. Some countries are very litigious. If you get a little burn on your hand because you spill a McDonald's coffee, someone will sue you. And I kind of find Sutton's comparison with this apt for the situation. After all, that famous McDonald's coffee lawsuit was horrific, and the plaintiff suffered third-degree burns all across her lap, needing skin grafts on her thighs. The coffee wasn't hot, but far more dangerously hot than would be considered normal. Sure, you expect to be burned if you spill coffee on yourself, but you shouldn't be expecting to need skin grafts after doing so. The reason why I say it's appropriate is because Sutton is treating Nevis's issues, secrecy, and perhaps people's difficulty in even finding the commission itself as if they are a little burn. When, in actuality, they show how dangerous this can become. People deserve privacy, but Nevis goes so far in that direction that they seem to be protecting people that use it as justification to cause harm. When this reporter for The Guardian asked Sutton about these occurrences, she laughed and stated, "I can't accept that there has been multiple usage of our structures to facilitate whatever. I can't accept hearing it from you. I won't be able to speak to that." And as the reporter pressed forward and insisted that online trolls looking to smear Emmanuel Macron before the 2017 French presidential election created fake documents supposedly showing he had a shell company in Nevis, Sutton just said, "People make things up all the time. Once you are an international financial center and provide certain services, you will always be a target. It doesn't matter that it's true." That could be the case, absolutely. But the reason that these online trolls created these fake documents is because it looks shady and suspicious to deal with Nevis. Even if not everyone using their protections is a scammer, there's no doubt the scammers would find it useful. The fact that Sutton so easily dismisses this is concerning at best. Now, some argue that Nevis isn't hidden. It's simply a reinforced way to protect assets. This might be why a wealthy person may want to own a house in Kensington via a Nevisian company, because it prevents a divorced spouse or creditor from accessing that property without a tortious legal process. Jeffrey Fisher, one of America's leading divorce lawyers, says that, quote, "You've got to realize that the asset protection industry is trillions of dollars, not billions of dollars. It's trillions of dollars." Essentially, it's, "We're going to find a way to screw legitimate creditors out of collecting a legitimate debt. That's the business these people are in." Others argue that Nevis has a good reputation and flexibility, as LLCs aren't necessarily perceived as tax evasion vehicles. One source states that they actually have a great reputation and are considered a leader in offshore company registration because of their strong security and asset protection. After all, these many protections and defenses aren't really meant to be used. Instead, the Guardian claims that they're like bright coloring of a poisonous tree frog. They exist to warn you from attacking in the first place. If they can persuade a plaintiff to settle out of court for less than is owed, then for a rich person with valuable assets, it's worth paying for. For all this protection, some people definitely pay a lot for it. Now, before we continue on to take a look at what Nevis Island and others can offer, we're going to take a quick break to thank today's sponsor, and then we're getting right into offshore scams. The last months of the year are always the busiest. Halloween is right around the corner, the Christmas season is going to begin ramping up, and I've got to admit, when I'm swamped, eating well is sort of hard to keep on top of. But now my freezer can stay stocked thanks to Daily Harvest. And that's because Daily Harvest offers delicious harvest bowls, flatbread, smoothies, and even more delivered right to your door. And it's built on organic fruits and vegetables. They don't use any preservatives, added sugars, or anything artificial, and they're ready fast, usually in just a couple minutes. And another thing I really like about them is that most of their packaging is compostable or recyclable. Now, I think you guys know I am a massive fan of the smoothies, but let me put you onto a different one. They have one that has dragon fruit in it, and you know, dragon fruit for me is kind of a hit and miss. Like, Starbucks really ruined dragon fruit for me, but this smoothie brings it back. So enjoy this time of year even more with Daily Harvest. Make sure to go to dailyharvest.com/casket and get up to $40 off your first box. That's dailyharvest.com/casket for up to $40 off your first box. dailyharvest.com/casket. So, not long ago, in the very stylish, very velvet 1970s, Adam and Eve was born. And I'm not talking about the biblical Adam and Eve, I mean the adult boutique Adam and Eve. It doesn't matter what you're into, chances are pretty high that Adam and Eve has got you covered. They've got everything from lingerie, games, movies, toys, and more. So it doesn't matter if you're up for a night of solo play, or perhaps you're bringing a friend or two along. Adam and Eve has most likely got you covered. Plus, Adam and Eve offers 24/7 customer service and a 90-day no-hassle return policy. So if anything goes wrong with your order, just let them know and they'll get it taken care of for you. Plus, Adam and Eve is out here doing good in the world. 20% of their profit goes to fight the spread of HIV around the world. And Adam and Eve just turned 50 this year, and to celebrate their half century of sex positivity, they're giving out all the deals, just like this one. So if you want to try something new from Adam and Eve, make sure you go to adamandeve.com and use code CASKET to get 50% off one item and free shipping in the US and Canada. In 2006, one Senate report revealed just how much scams were getting out of control. It named the Wiley brothers, a pair of Texas billionaires and major Republican donors that raided the offshore system to finance their domestic ventures, as well as the owner of the New York Jets football team, Robert Wood Johnson IV, and the producer of the Mighty Morphin Power Ranger children's show, Chaim Sabin. Johnson and Sabin were both victims in the report who had allegedly been assured by professional advisors that their deals to avoid taxes were more likely lawful than not. According to the report, a tax shelter boutique in Seattle called Quelos Group had apparently concocted a tax shelter using $9.6 billion worth of fake securities transactions that were used to generate billions of dollars of fake capital losses. And if that sounds a bit confusing to you, let's simplify what happened in Senator Carl Levin's own words, as he's the one who ran the investigation. Levin stated, "They just wrote down the numbers on paper and claimed losses. It was just like fantasy football, except the taxes not paid were for real," end quote. Other sources describe it as such. Greenstein and Wilk are accused of setting up a complex series of sham transactions through a shell company on the Isle of Man to blend wealthy investors' earnings with an equal number of stock losses to avoid owing capital gains taxes. But the indictment charges the losing stocks didn't exist, the company that supposedly acquired the stocks had neither employees nor earnings, and the blended investment vehicles were a fraud. The two men misled some of the country's wealthiest citizens to commit tax fraud, Sullivan said. Apparently, the two businessmen heading this operation, Jeffrey Greenstein and Charles Wilk, were sentenced to just over 4 years in prison after devising one of the largest tax evasion scams in U.S. history. And I'm sure if there's one thing we can immediately agree on, it's that 4 years is not enough. But what I think makes this situation all the more infuriating is not only how little punishment these people face, but how little the justice system seems to care. Apparently, Greenstein had a history of philanthropy and humanitarian acts, and he donated a massive amount of money to charities and other various causes. After the judge sentenced him, he called Greenstein, who had just stolen hundreds of millions of dollars, an extraordinary individual. And yes, criminals can do good things too, but that doesn't mean a judge should be complimenting them during their sentencing. Now, as for the Wiley brothers, they made at least $190 million through stock option exercises offshore, but didn't pay taxes on the money. Instead, they would borrow from those accounts to buy valuables such as portraits, homes, jewelry, and property operations. As for what this Senate report has to do with Nevis, well, not only does it detail how these people ducked hundreds of millions of dollars in tax payments, but they did it using offshore locations. And some of these offshore locations included Belize, the British Virgin Islands, the Cayman Islands, the Isle of Man, Nevis, and Panama. Naturally, this is far from the only time this has happened. In 1997, billionaire Bob Brockman set up a holding company in Nevis that acted as a straw buyer for his investments in Vista. To put a very, very long story short, he allegedly used unreported taxable income to buy a luxury yacht, created an encrypted email system, asked a money manager to attend a money laundering conference under an assumed identity, engaged in tax evasion, wire fraud, and other financial crimes as part of a 20-year scheme to conceal about $2 billion in income from the IRS, as well as defraud investors in his software firm's debt securities. Dollar amounts aside, I have not seen this pattern of greed or concealment and cover-up in my 25-plus years as a special agent, Jim Lee, chief of the IRS Criminal Investigation Unit, said during a press conference. Apparently, this manipulative billionaire had successfully harmed so many because they had trust in him. In the 90s, when Ford decided they didn't want to be in the IT business, they sold Dealer Computer Services, or Brockman's Universal Computer Services, for just over $100 billion. But the deal came with a condition. Brockman was able to keep using the Ford Blue Oval brand, letterhead, address, and even same employees for 5 years incognito. Trying to get out of contracts with Brockman proved to be almost impossible, as they were Darth Vader contracts, meaning that many upgrades or new services came with extensions. And it's been named that because it's enabled his attorneys to destroy rebellious leaders. Brockman has a hold on people to the point where even the threats of bankruptcy couldn't free dealers from his grip. In 2010, Jay Gill, a Fresno, California-based entrepreneur with 10 dealerships, was hit with a $3 million bill when he acquired Livermore Auto Group, which had been paying $35,000 a month to Brockman's company. They settled for about half that. Brockman made his money by screwing people, Gill says. Anytime you asked for something or you needed something, he would automatically extend your contract without you knowing. When you have a 12-inch thick contract, it's somewhere in there. Brockman made a living by hurting others, essentially, and he didn't want to share that money either. Instead, his money, as we know, was hidden in Nevis. Yes, it was hidden in Belize as well, but it's hardly any wonder that Nevis has gained a reputation as a tax haven. And as their competition slowly opens up more to transparency, reports claim that Nevis's business has secretly redoubled. Britain's biggest tax fraud case originated in Nevis when 5 men were jailed after trying to fraud the treasury of over £107 million in taxes. They're not the only ones internationally using Nevis either. The family of a former Taiwan president used a Nevis trust to help hide his ownership of corruptly acquired U.S. properties. And a deposed Ukrainian president used their structures to hide his stolen assets, as well as corrupt Russian officials that stole $230 million from the 2007 budget. In one 2011 report from the Insurance Journal, it claimed that one man had attempted to launder money in a scam involving the sale of bogus insurance to a New York tour operator whose boat capsized in 2005, killing 20 elderly tourists. He sold fake liability insurance over the course of 10 years, and it wasn't until Ethan Allen's boat sank in 2005 that his tour boat operator learned his insurance policy was completely fictitious. The scammer, Malchus Bonkamper, had acquired 4 insurance companies in St. Kitts and Nevis and fabricated financial statements by listing assets that he knew were worthless, such as non-existent bonds guaranteed by a Swiss bank. One of the most ridiculous cases of a scammer using Nevis to protect them is one that I brought up in the Junes episode. Now, that one's going to be coming out in just a couple weeks, but here's a bit of a recap. In April 2009, Kurt Donsbach was arrested for selling unapproved drugs, evading taxes, and smuggling medicines into the country. Not only that, but Kurt also falsely misrepresented a product as a cure for cancer and claimed that nutritionists like him were at risk for genocide. Quackwatch has an entire article about Kurt where they say that he operated a facility he called the most advanced holistic hospital in North America. The hospital's website stated he had long been recognized as a world leader in charting effective holistic treatment programs. Brochures from the facility state that it offered the most comprehensive facility found anywhere for the treatment of cancer and was the right alternative for those who have been told you have an incurable disease. Donsbach was, simply put, a scammer. Seriously, there's decades and decades of scams throughout this article, from operating his own non-accredited school in 1979 to selling supplements in the 80s that send people to the hospital to making claims of an unapproved new drug called Orichel, to even smuggling drugs in 1996. Stephen Barrett of Quackwatch said that at the end of the article, he knows of no one engaged in more health-related scams than Kurt. And, of course, another ridiculous example would be the MLM Jeunesse itself. The MLM founder, Randy Ray, had three companies connected to Jeunesse that are all registered in guess which little island? Nevis. In 2009, Randy had to sign an agreement with the state of Florida under which three companies that he co-owned agreed to pay $100,000 to Florida and to refrain from false and misleading advertising, chain marketing, and pyramid schemes. So, is it honestly any wonder that Nevis gets a bad reputation when they protect people like this? There's so many cases of this happening that I can't even possibly discuss them all, but I think the point has been generally made. Even though privacy is important, there's a fine line between giving someone lots of privacy and giving them protection to commit crimes, at least as far as Nevis is concerned. Thankfully, a lot of this was revealed fairly recently when leaked documents finally saw the light of day. So let's get into what happened in 2017 when an event known as the Paradise Papers took place. The Paradise Papers are a collection of over 13.4 million leaked files and 1.4 terabytes of leaked data from offshore service providers and company registries obtained by the German newspaper, not pronouncing that name. But a German newspaper said that they revealed the offshore interests and activities of politicians, world leaders, and celebrities, and the tax engineering of more than 100 multinational corporations. This leak is important because if wrongdoing is found and exposed, these high-profile people could be forced from office and/or stripped of their powers. Investopedia explains that even though a Bermuda law firm named Appleby was the origin of the leak, over 180 countries were named in total. Nevis was one of four Caribbean tax havens called out in the Paradise Papers, and they were highlighted by the Paris-based Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development as being uncooperative. I'd say the interview we saw with Sutton confirms as such. They certainly haven't proven themselves as wanting to or willing to change. Aruba was part of the gray list, on the other hand, since they agreed to amend or abolish their harmful tax regime. In fact, the only reason Nevis wasn't on the blacklist in 2017 when the Paradise Papers were released is because, if you recall, Nevis was experiencing some pretty severe hurricanes around that time. As that damaged a lot of the key infrastructure, the council effectively had no choice but to give them the benefit of the doubt. Frustrating and worryingly enough, the ICIJ, or International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, also pointed out that the registers of the four jurisdiction names offered limited searches, with no transparent listings of company officers or directors. And there are people within the Paradise Papers you probably know as well. The leaked documents unveiled business links between Donald Trump's Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross and Vladimir Putin's son-in-law. Apparently, Ross has a stake in a shipping company that received more than $68 million in revenue since 2014 from a Russian energy company owned by Putin's son-in-law. More than a dozen Trump cabinet advisors were named, as well as Queen Elizabeth II. Her private estate had invested millions of pounds into offshore tax haven funds in Cayman Islands and Bermuda. And these secret financial dealings of the chief fundraiser for Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau were also revealed. Thanks to all this sudden attention brought to this topic after 2017, in 2018, Nevis finally committed to change. Though Nevis, along with St. Kitts and the Bahamas, had landed themselves on the EU's blacklist, they were finally removed once they did so. Fair tax groups and EU lawmakers have criticized this decision, as well as the fact that some renowned tax avoidance countries aren't on the EU blacklist at all. Nevis moved to the gray list and, as of 2020, a whitelist. They're no longer required to implement measures for increased tax transparency, as the Nevis Assembly has passed laws which provide international business companies and limited liability companies to be treated in the same way as domestic companies. In other words, LLCs don't have the amount of power they did before, at least for now. If Nevis proves themselves to be undeserving of the whitelist status, they could be blacklisted once again. After all, the Cayman Islands and Panama were added back to the blacklist. Panama because they lost their largely compliant rating, and the Cayman Islands allegedly only escaped inclusion on the blacklist previously because they had support of the UK. And the UK is no longer a member of the EU Council post-Brexit. Of course, this is all only a theory, and it seems more likely that they were blacklisted because they were delayed in implementing legislative changes in the area. They passed the EU's deadline by 3 days. But with all of that being said, that's where I'm going to end today's episode. I know this one was a little shorter, but it's something that I think is really interesting. I'm absolutely fascinated in how, why, the many ways that million and billionaires hide money in these little tiny islands, it seems. It's nearly as fascinating as it is fucked up, and as more of these types of papers come out, we continue to learn more and more about these types of realities. So with that being said, this episode is coming to an end. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, make sure that you are liking, following, subscribing, doing all the good stuff so that you can stay up to date on all the latest episodes. And if you want more from me, make sure to check out my Linktree link. I'm going to be streaming on Twitch more often. All my social media is there. All of my other projects I'm involved in. Everything is literally there. So thank you all so much for making it, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye.